Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Aurora Grande, for Tuesday, July 12th. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Dickens.
Here.
Council Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Council Board Member Arnold.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello is absent tonight, and Mayor Chair Ferrara.
Here. Item 3 is our flag salute, and I get to do the honors this evening. If you would stand and join me in the flag salute, and then also remain standing for our invocation. Pastor Robert Banker is here from the Open Door Church in Oceano to deliver our invocation.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Shall we pray? Again, our loving Father, we give thanks unto you tonight for all the wonderful things that we enjoy in this community. When we hear of hurricanes and the terrorism and all the things that are going on in the world today, we give thanks for the peace and the prosperity that we enjoy. Father, we pray for our young men and women who are serving our country throughout the world in so many different places. We ask your watch care over them. Bring them home safely. Bring peace to our world, we ask, dear Lord. And then again, Father, we pray for the council as they serve our community with their time and their energy and their effort when they could be doing other things to entertain themselves. They give of their time to the community, not only just to the meeting tonight, but also to the various activities during the week that demand their presence and their scrutiny of all of the minutes and various things that need to be voted on tonight. And Father, we just ask your blessing upon them for their service. This we ask in our Savior's name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. You know, we typically allow the person or organization that presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. That takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forth and present any thoughts, suggestions, or observations on matters that are not scheduled on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters that are not published on the agenda. We would ask that you restrict your comments to 3 minutes or less, and please address the council as a whole. Any member of the audience who would like to come forward at this time?
I would. Good evening. I'm Steve Thayer from Big Brothers Big Sisters of San Luis Obispo County. And 101 years ago, a clerk of the Children's Court in New York kept seeing the kids come back through the court system. And he got together with some of his friends, and he said, well, what can we do about this? And they said, well, maybe if we spend some time with these kids. And that's how Big Brother started in New York City 101 years ago. Of course, it's a whole different story from the people in Philadelphia who started. They think they started the same year, but nonetheless, it's been a long time ago. Locally, we've been around for 10 years now, and this is our 10th anniversary, and we're very proud of what we've done during the time. But primarily, it's been a year of thanking people who have given us support throughout the year. We've had 700 big brothers and big sisters that have served in the last 10 years. We've had 75 board members. We've had 2,000 donors. But we've also had the city governments who have helped us, especially with CDBG. And on behalf of the board of directors, our staff, and the kids that we serve in your community, I'd like to present a plaque to you for your service to us.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. You're welcome. Great.
It's
great.
Thanks. Anybody else with things to give to us? It's a great plaque. Thanks again. All right. Any other members of the audience who would like to come forward during community comments? Okay. Seeing none, we will close item 7, and that will take us to item 8, our consent agenda. This is a group of items that we normally approve in one action unless there are items on the consent agenda that, that any member of the council would like to pull for further discussion or independent action. This is also an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward and comment on items on the consent agenda. Those would be items 8A through 8J. I'm sorry, 8I. So this, again, would be an opportunity. Anyone who would like to come forward and comment on a consent item, this would be the opportunity for you to do so. Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment on the consent. What is the will of the council?
I have none.
There is one item that I would like to pull that I was discussing briefly with Don Spagnola, and that's 8G. Don, I know you're here. There he is, magically appears. As we discussed, Don, this was a couple of questions that I had. I recall the presentation that Tuckfield and Associates gave during our budget meeting, and more specifically within the structure of the budget meeting, your presentation on the CIP, Capital Improvement Program. And so I guess my question here is that given the scope of this study, this is a $20,000 allocation, roughly. So, the fundamental question is this something that we really need to do with Tuckfield and Associates, or is this something that you know we can do in house?
Yeah, and going back to the budget session, we did have a capital improvement program line item for a water master plan update. And I think we had $35,000 in that one line item. We are going to take some money from that line item to identify and address the funding issues. Part of the master plan, we had identified several different funding sources. And this is an opportunity for someone who's in the field of funding and accounting and that kind of thing to help us identify what's available and what might be the best source of funds for the city to address some of the storm drain issues that we have.
Okay. Can I add to that, too? Also, when we're talking about developing
a strategy for internal funding, which I thought perhaps we could do just as well.
Okay.
Those were all my questions and comments on this. Any other issues? Okay. Thank you. All right. With that, if there are no further items to be pulled or discussed individually, I'll accept a motion. I'll entertain a motion for approval of consent items 8A through 8I.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Do we have items in there to read?
No, Mayor Farrar, we don't.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Dickens?
Yes.
Council Board Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Council Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Chair Farrar?
Yes. Thank you.
Back row.
Okay. Okay. Before we go on to our public hearing, Mr. Nestor, you're here. So at this time, I would like to kind of backtrack, if we could, to item number five, our special presentations. And this won't take long, but Greg, if you could meet me at the podium. You know, I've done this several times with regard to this particular project. I know you've heard me mention the Let There Be Lights program. This is something that's been very special for our community, the relighting, if you will, in a kind of a period style of the village and the creekside area as well. It's a tremendous enhancement to our community. This project doesn't happen if it isn't for the generous contributions of people like Greg that have stepped forward with, again, some very generous donations. And so this was prepared back in June 28th, and it's the first opportunity we've had to bring it forward. But, Greg, it's my pleasure on behalf of the council to present a mayor's commendation to Greg Nestor, Nestor Construction, in recognition of your generous contribution for the Village Streetlight Let There Be Lights program, and it's dated June 28, 2005. So our heartfelt appreciation for your generous contribution, and thank you so much.
All right, thank you. I remember June 28th as a day when I got to have a root canal without being planned, so I'm sorry I wasn't here the first time, but a bigger thing came up, I'm afraid. But I appreciate the opportunity to contribute to Main Street AG as we know it, and look forward to contributing architecturally in the future, and we'll be here to present that someday. So thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, that will take us to item number 9, public hearing. This is a consideration of an ordinance adding Chapter 2.21 to Title 2 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code entitled Historical Resources Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. Unfortunately, I forgot to include an important attachment in your packet, which is Attachment A to the ordinance, and I don't believe that you'll be able to make an action tonight on this proposal, but I would like to briefly go over the staff report and presentation and be able to elicit information and feedback from you, and we're going to recommend that this be continued until August 9th. With your permission, I'll go ahead and give the presentation then. This proposal is for the establishment of a historical resource committee, the establishment of a minor use permit for determination of historical resources, and appointment procedures for the Historic Resource Committee. This project started with direction from the City Council back in 2003, where the Council directed staff to come up with a local designation process and incentives for property owners. But further back, there's clearly a history back 20 years of the city trying to protect historical resources. There were design guidelines for the village that were established in 1985. They were updated in 1994 and 2003. There was a design overlay district that was established in 1991, and there was a historic resource survey completed also in 1991. Throughout this year and a half, there's been many meetings between the Architectural Review Committee, the Planning Commission, and also the City Council, and the following recommendations were given to us. First was the establishment of a Historic Resources Committee, development and rehabilitate them for adaptive reuse when necessary. The first item would be establishment of a Historic Resources Committee, and this committee would have duties which include overseeing and updating the Historic Resource Survey, reviewing and recommending to the Architectural Review Committee, the Community Development Director, the Planning Commission, and the City Council of a review process and subsequent nomination of properties, a periodic review of the survey, quarterly meetings, and also the power to establish ad hoc subcommittees to assist in various research tasks. In the resolution is a proposal for appointment procedures. The HRC is proposed to be made up of 5 members. 3 of the members should have specific knowledge of aspects of historic preservation, such as architecture, local history, construction, historic preservation techniques, and knowledge of the California Environmental Quality Act. And also, members should be able to read plans and other technical drawings presented to them. The appointment procedure would be that each city council member and a mayor could appoint one member with approval of the majority of the council, and these members would serve until January 31st after the end of the appointing council member's term. For historical resources determination, there would be an establishment of a minor use permit under 1616.211 of the Municipal Code, and properties can be nominated either by a Historic Resource Committee member, any resident of Arroyo Grande, or even the owner of the property. The designation would be achieved through the Community Development Director with recommendations from the Historic Resources Committee and the Architectural Review Committee. The nomination would require Planning Commission public hearing if the property owner objects to this qualification, and it's subject to appeal to the City Council. When a property is nominated, the process would begin, and no exterior modifications could be made without a permit approved by the Community Development Director upon recommendation of the ARC and the HRC. Ordinary repairs and mitigation of dangerous conditions could occur. There's also a duty of the property owner to keep the building in good repair. And if there is an appeal to the Planning Commission or the City Council, there would be a work moratorium to that property that would stop, other than the ones listed here. It's also proposed to add additional findings for alteration or demolition of properties deemed historic resources. So with regard to a historical resource or outstanding historical resource, the proposed work will neither adversely affect the exterior architectural features of the resource nor adversely affect the character or historical, architectural, or aesthetic interest or value of such a resource and its site. Another finding would be with regard to any property located within a historic district, the proposed work conforms to the prescriptive standards for the district adopted by the committee and does not adversely affect the character of the district. And the last would be the work is consistent with the provisions of another section in the municipal code. Also, changes to the municipal code would be adding several definitions, including a development permit, exterior architectural feature, historical resource or district, improvement, ordinary maintenance and repair, and outstanding historical resources. And like I said, unfortunately, since the exhibit was left out, I don't think you can make an action on this tonight, and we'd like to continue it to August 9th. And I can answer any questions, and your community development director is here also.
Are there any questions or clarifications in the staff report?
I have a couple.
Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You make reference to the five members that would be on the historical committee. Is there a restriction as to who can be on, i.e., could an ARC member be on that committee also? I didn't see anything that specifically forbid that.
Yeah, there's no specific language that states whether or not they're presently serving on another body in the city, so I believe that they would be allowed to do that.
And I noticed also, because one of the concerns that I think I had when I was on planning was the number of five members, in that this could become overwhelming. But I noticed in your presentation tonight you talked about ad hoc committees that could be formed. So therefore, if it was determined that the workload was excessive for the five members, then additional members on an ad hoc basis could be added. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And then also, you talked about the standards. If someone wanted to remodel the inside or the exterior, are we looking at adopting some set of standards?
Was noticed as such, but in a moment, not just yet. Any other members of the council have issues with the staff report? Yes. Councilmember Dickens.
Yeah, Jim. One of the questions that I had in regards to the establishment of the Historic Resource Committee and the selection process is that typically, I think, and uniformly across the board with all of our other commissions and committees, those members are required to live within the city of Arroyo Grande. And I don't see any mention specifically in the resolution as proposed that would preclude someone in this particular committee to live outside the city limits. So I guess what I would like to know is that something that would be considered a must as currently presented, or is there leeway to allow for someone who had historic knowledge to actually be nominated for a position. And I can, I mean, there are several folks that I think, you know, possibly living today that would have some vital information and could be a great contributor to this committee that don't live in the city.
Yes, I believe that there's leeway since it's not specifically mentioned, and I'd certainly like to allow this city manager or city attorney if they know something that I don't. And we are certainly blessed that we do have a lot of people in the area, the South County area, and even the county in general, that have a lot of knowledge of the history of Arroyo Grande and the resources, and I think there is leeway to sum up.
And my last question, Jim, in regards to the, I think one of our most important aspects that we'll probably get to in the future, but if you could comment on it now, but item E, where it talks about creation of incentives, you've mentioned the Mills Act tax relief and the uniform building codes and so forth. How do you see us moving forward in getting more information about those particular items and then maybe even other subsequent items that might be considered beneficial for folks to actually take the step of nominating their particular site for a local registry?
It seems that our incentives are a very important part of any historical resource protection program, and staff has been working hard to learn about this, see what other cities are doing, see what kind of programs and incentives are out there. Staff will be working hard to come up with ideas, and certainly we'd rely greatly on council recommendations, Planning Commission, Historic Resources Commission, ARC, and that'll be one of the first things that we'll work with the Historic Resource Commission on, committee on.
You're then envisioning that information and then to come back as part of recommendations through the Historic Resource Committee?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
One question, Jim. On page 5 of the staff report, about the third paragraph, specifically dealing with the protest section, I'm trying to read this sentence. Compliance due to significant economic hardship or other significant reasons approved or other significant reasons approved by the city council. The question I have there, is that going to be on a case-by-case basis that if there's a protest then, or are we going to, I realize some of this still has to come back because the committees are going to look at that. Is there going to be something, some sort of guidelines for what the protest findings would be in similar to a variance, or is that something that on case-by-case we're going to expect the council to look at on our
It would seem very prudent to come up with strict guidelines, or at least guidelines that can help in determining what's an economic hardship. We have the words here, but we know that life is not black and white. Certainly, in the very beginning, there may be a time where we may have to go on a case-by-case basis, but certainly development of these guidelines would be a top priority.
I had a couple of questions, Jim. I guess my first question was the determination as to the makeup of the committee and specifically the selection criteria that's in the second resolution. Says the committee shall consist of 5 members. 3 members should have knowledge about aspects of historic preservation. Obviously, that would be a good thing. Architecture, local history, construction, historic preservation techniques to an extent, and CEQA. And then also technical knowledge should consist of whoever the person is being able to read and interpret mechanical, architectural, and engineering drawings as they relate to the appearance of a proposed building, signage, structure, so on and so forth. And then 2 members need, and I don't know how the other council members feel, but to find 3 people out of 5 that have that kind of technical background, I'm not so sure in my own mind that that's absolutely necessary. I think if you have one or 2 with that background who could advise in that capacity, who could translate, that's an
it's a difficult combination of a background, I think, to find in a community our size, even if we were to extend it. Anyhow, those are just some thoughts. I don't know how the other members of the council feel, but I would like to look again at that criteria. In terms of CEQA, are we referring, I'm assuming we're referring only to the aspect of CEQA as it relates to historic structures. And again, that it would seem to me, I don't know how you feel, but that's fairly easily digested. Is it not?
Yeah, I think having an overview of what CEQA is, and it's a process to disseminate information as well as specifically towards historic preservation. And certainly there could be trainings, and staff would certainly like to delve into that section of CEQA also.
So that can be a skill that can be learned if you find someone who's willing and has some of the other background that's described here.
Seems plausible.
Okay. I have a couple of other issues that I think I'll hold for comment, and since this is coming back, then I'm assuming that you'll take comments, and then when it does come back, we can...
Actually, our preference would be to get some consensus if there's any changes you'd like to see, so when we bring it back, it'd be ready for adoption.
Okay. All right. We'll get to that, but again, as I indicated, this was noticed as a public hearing, so at this time, if there are members of the audience who would like to come forward on 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. I know we had at least one taker, so.
I wanted to see if somebody else wanted to go first. Good evening, Mayor Ferrara and City Council members. My name is Kathleen Sullivan. I'm a member of the South County Historical Society and a member of its board of directors, and my husband and I, Bob, are both docents for the Historical Society. And we're here tonight to urge your positive consideration of this ordinance and to let you know that our society would be willing to help you in any way that it could should you choose to adopt it. And I would like to tell you one personal thing. One of the things that drew us to Arroyo Grande when we were looking for a place to retire, and we could have gone to my hometown of Santa Barbara, was the historical preservation that was going on here. And the first thing we did was to join the society and become docents. So we and other members of the society are very supportive and urge your positive consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward on this?
Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. I think this is a great idea. There are a lot of cities, and large and small, that have these kind of committees that have done a great deal for restoring old structures and maintaining correctly old structures. The city of Alexandria, Virginia, which is a very large city, still has a really nice core of the city that dates back to the 1700s with original cobblestone streets. So it's something that can be done well. The city of Santa Fe deals with homes that were built in the 1600s and are restored historically, as well as historic recreations. Both of those cities, although much larger than Arroyo Grande, have extensive backgrounds in restoration. I don't know that you would be able to find help as far as how to develop your board, but they certainly could provide technical background as to where and how restorations can be successfully done. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Gordon Bennett, I'm giving you the wrong address, 415 Allen Street.
We know where to find you, Gordon.
Okay, fine. Mr. Mayor and City Council, just one thing. I was riding my bike over Crown Hill today, and I looked over and saw my father's house being tore down. And it's been there since 1922. And by tomorrow, it should be all gone unless they're going to leave a certain part where they can...
The ordinance. In fact, it would be embarrassing if it didn't. So I urge you, please, to adopt this. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Last call. Okay. We'll close public comment on item 9A and bring this back for recommendations and input. And Councilmember Arnold, why don't we start with you?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I'll start off with the item that you brought up. As far as the makeup of the committee, I would think that at least two people should probably have some technical background. It can be frustrating at times, I think, with Planning Commission. At times, I think at one point there were only two of us that could read blueprints, and at times it can get a little overwhelming to try to educate everyone. So I'd like to see at least two. I could probably forgo the three. I am a little concerned, actually, that two members wouldn't have to have any historic preservation knowledge. Or it says technical. I'm not sure what the word technical in association with that. I'd like to make sure that everyone has some kind of historical knowledge of the area. As far as whether or not members must live in the city, I think that would be limiting our knowledge base. I think there's a lot of very knowledgeable people on Arroyo Grande that, through technicality, may live a block outside of the city, and so I wouldn't want to exclude them from this. I think we've talked about this a fair amount in the past. I'm very comfortable with everything else that I saw in the document, and I would have no problem going forward. I recognize we can't tonight, but I am definitely in support of this, so thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I want to say that I'm real pleased to see this come forward. And Sandra Loomis Cabasi says, we need to have this done. And I think that's been one of the things that this council is asked staff to do, and here we are. So I think that I'd like to applaud staff for all the work that they've put together. I know this is we've asked them to do a lot, but I think it's extremely important. And I think that by moving forward with the types of things we're looking at and establishing a mechanism for both identifying local resources and for the review process is going to be extremely helpful and beneficial. In regards to some of the specifics, in regards comments specifically that the mayor had made earlier about the technical knowledge necessary for the committee, I'm looking back at what this committee is going to actually be looking at in its job duties and responsibilities, and I don't see this particular committee needing the expertise to look at blueprints and to look at the technical nature. They're not going to necessarily be reviewing development proposals coming before them. They're actually going to be looking at, and I can say here, the responsibilities would include recommending criteria, overseeing or assisting comprehensive survey updates and expansions, and nominating potentially significant surveyed properties to the local historic registry or state and federal registries. This is going to be a body that has limited responsibilities. They're going to be looking at and giving us their expertise because of their vast knowledge. Most likely, I see the folks on this committee, probably those that have lived here for the vast majority of their lives, or secondly, are very involved in research and can look up things, and then certainly having, you know, a little bit of CEQA knowledge and understanding how structures are put together and what is architecturally significant and so forth might be of benefit. But those are going to be secondary, in my opinion. We're really looking for those people that really know the lay of the land. So I don't know if it necessarily has to be technical in nature. And again, I'll bring forth my item. We may want to specify that this particular committee is not limited to city boundaries. Every other commission, and I would agree that every other commission and committee within the city should, and I'm not suggesting we should to change any of those others, but this one I can see is really looking at a different role. Some of the names that I just off the top of my head, and I don't even know whether these people would even want to be on this committee, but people like Charles Porter, who lives in Napomo, has a vast knowledge of this particular area. Glenda Guyton, who lives in Oceano, she's grown up here and can contribute. Effie McDermott lives in Pismo. And God forbid someone like Gordon Bennett actually moving over to the big city of Halcyon someday, who knows? But, you know, we have resources out there, whether those folks, and I'm sure there's lots of others that would be great contributors. You know, I just think it's important that and I think that those are the two types of things we need to look at. The first, as I mentioned, is you already have people that have moved here who understand and really have a high regard for the resources that we have and have possibly even purchased these properties or have lived there their whole lives. My reason for mentioning that is that I think it's important for us to create incentives. If we're going to actually want buy-in for those property owners to do what they're already doing, then there needs to be some additional benefits to go that extra step and say, yeah, I want this to be registered, get the tax breaks if indeed that the Mills Act applies. And of course, I know we're currently in the process of redoing our over 100-year-old home. It gets tricky when you have the Uniform Building Code and you have stairways that are only 28 inches wide, and that doesn't meet your code. But that's the way it is. How do you go about bringing it up to standards that are livable, and yet they don't quite meet the appropriate standards? You gotta have some give and take, and I think the city needs to look at the Uniform Building Code in regards to that particular resource and having flexibility. I think those are my two major comments in regards to bringing it back before us. I would like to when it does come back, and maybe this is the attachment, Jim, that you were talking about, but you had some definitions in your PowerPoint. Those are some things that I'd like to see when that comes back to us. So when we identifying those particular terms that are being used, what are we actually talking about? That's not before us this evening. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I too will echo thanks to staff. I know this has been a long road in developing this and doing this kind of on the fly while we actually have projects coming forward in the middle. I do think this is one of the things that when I first was on Planning Commission that I really felt was something we needed to do right away, because we really did need a higher level of certainty. And I think this will, it may not be the certainty that everybody wants, but it will provide a significantly higher level of certainty going forward. On the specific issue of the technical knowledge, I have to echo Councilman Dickens' comments here, is that I do think this is not an architectural review committee. This is going to be historic resources review, and where we're actually going to have action that's technical, I really think the ARC is going to be taking over. They're going to be advising the ARC and saying this is what's significant about this building historically, and it's going to be our ARC's role to see that whatever changes take place don't damage that. So I could say actually no technical people on this, and I will tell you, having really struggled to find somebody living in the city with the technical background for ARC, that I can certainly find in three more people could be very difficult indeed. So I actually could see no technical people here, that these would all be people with historic interests and skill. I will. The other comment I have that has to do with exactly what Councilman Dickens was talking about, which is the providing the incentives. I do think that we are going to have to take it at the Uniform Building Code when we're going to allow, because these buildings do have to evolve. They do have to meet current standards and current needs. And I do think that's actually the place where we'll see other communities who have already done this. There's no reason to reinvent the wheel here. We can probably, photocopy wholesale new codes from those communities and move forward fairly quickly with that. With those comments, I'm real happy with the. I know it's still a very open-ended process, but I'm real happy to see us moving forward, and we'll look forward to the final product. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I raised the issue on the selection criteria, and
you know, I appreciate the input from all of the members of council. Again, I would come back and I think support some of the specific observations that Councilmember Dickens and Councilmember Guthrie mentioned. I really do believe that once this committee is convened, that if there is a technical question, however it may arise, that perhaps staff could perform that advisory interpretation or whatever the case may be for the benefit of them, just so they can, you know, keep the context of the issue. So we may want to, I think you're getting a sense that we may want to take a look at the selection criteria again. On the issue of residency within the city, I'm very happy to see members of the South County Historical Society here, and particularly with the offer of support. This is the ordinance of the City Council of the City of Roy Grande adding Chapter 2.2.1, so on and so forth. If you look at the whereas paragraphs, second up from the bottom, it says, whereas the formation of a historical resources committee and the creation of a process for historical resource determination will control the demolition of historic structures in order to preserve to the greatest extent feasible the diverse qualities that define the character of the community of Arroyo Grande. Maybe this is just the way it struck me, but the word control the demolition. I'm thinking maybe we might be able to revisit that. And then it says in order to preserve to the greatest extent feasible. You know, this whole term. Of feasibility has popped up before in planning doctrine, and I always wrestle with it, because who determines degrees of feasibility and how does it apply? I understand what this is trying to say, but it sort of leaves, you know, who makes that determination of feasibility? The person who wants to tear the structure down, or us? And how is it determined? Does the council do it? So I'm looking at those two terms and thinking maybe if we take a look at that paragraph again, and I understand what it's trying to do or say, but perhaps there's another approach. I don't know how the other members of council feel about it, but again, the term control the demolition of historic structures and then to the greatest extent feasible, I just think we can take another look at that and see if we can't come up with some better language. So with that, I'm going to echo the comments made by council. Again, this is something we started quite some time ago, and I'm very happy to see it continuing to move. I know that there are people in the community that would like to see it move faster, and I think so would we. So to the extent that we can keep this on the front burner, bring it back, and take some action on it, get it moving. Would be beneficial for everyone, I think. Those are my comments. Any other input? Yes.
Yeah, I would like to actually revisit the issue of the technical, because I think I looked at some of the responsibilities that I saw as HRC as actually ARC, and so I would also echo the rest of the councils that we do not need a technical experience at that level. So.
Okay. Seems to be unanimous. Thank you for that. Any other comments? Anything else you need from us this evening on this, Jim? Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, maybe I can interject just one other question. The issue of holding office in the city and the issue of residency both came up, and we never really followed up on holding other offices in the city. Of all the all the commissions and boards, the Traffic Commission and the Downtown Parking Advisory Board and ARC are the only ones that don't have that don't have a no other public office requirement. In other words, you can hold multiple offices and be a part of those boards. All the other committees and commissions have a restriction on serving in other boards or commissions. So I thought maybe if you wanted to provide some direction on that issue, it would be appropriate.
Good point. Thanks, Tim. Anybody have any?
Is the distinction there that those the committees that you named that don't have it are all advisory committees as opposed to?
Well, really the only one that, excuse me, but the only committee that's not truly advisory is the Planning Commission, who can take formal action. They have that requirement. So you're talking about Parking Advisory Board, Traffic Commission, and the ARC that allow multiple offices to be held. All the other ones don't.
Also, for instance, the Senior Committee of the Parks and Recreation Committee,
you can only be a member of that body. You can't be a member of ARC or Planning Commission or any other body. The logic of it is somewhat lost on me. With regard to the other issue, residency, the Downtown Parking Advisory Board does not require a residence. That's fairly clear because it involves business owners and out-of-town business ownership, but those are just observations, and the issue came up, so I throw it back at you.
Okay. So the question for us is, do we have consensus with regard to residency extending beyond the city of Arroyo Grande?
I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then the second issue is, should they be able to hold multiple offices?
If we had an individual who may felt being bulldogged down the road, who didn't agree with those particular boards, could feel like it's being stacked. So that's my only comment.
I guess my observation on this would be, we should go through the process, Kelly, of having folks fill out the request to serve, and see how the recruitment goes. I think from the standpoint of engaging the community and having community participation, this is another opportunity to get some fresh faces to participate in some of our committees. And this is, of course, one that's going to be probably pretty high profile. So it would be an opportunity for new people to become engaged in city activities, and I think that's one thing that we're attempting to do. On the other hand, if recruitment is such that we find ourselves not being able to get five folks to sit on this committee on a regular basis, and someone on the ARC wants to, I don't see restricting that individual. But I think first priority should be given to new people who want to become involved. Those are my thoughts. If we run into a pinch and we have someone who's willing, I don't necessarily see it as a conflict. But I think just from the standpoint of, again, kind of categorically in one of our committees, reaching out to the community and having them become engaged in a very important aspect of our heritage, that we ought to give folks who don't serve and are willing to preference. At least that's my thought. Nobody else want to chime in on that?
Strong feeling either way, but
okay.
I don't think we're helping staff much.
All right. Clear as mud.
I think that's good.
Did you want to... A motion for a date certain, or?
Yes.
Okay.
We recommend August 9th.
And what was the recommendation again?
August 9th.
August 9th?
Continuous to August.
Okay. 9th. Do you want to make that motion?
I'll make that motion. Okay. I make a motion of the Arroyo Grande City Council to continue this item to a date certain of August 9th.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, that takes us to item 10A, consideration of the 2004 Fleet Maintenance Study Recommendations. Don.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. Last year, the Public Works Department initiated an analysis of the city's vehicle maintenance operations, in part to identify potential operational efficiencies and cost savings. In the past, the Public Works Department maintained all the vehicles in-house at the Corporation Yard. However, about 15 years ago or so, the city began outsourcing most of the vehicle maintenance due to the cost to stock parts and materials and the increased regulations to dispose of oil and transmission fluid and those sorts of things. The goal of the study was to review the current operations and to provide a cost-benefit analysis of the alternatives that were presented. Some of the alternatives included outsourcing to other agencies. The City of San Luis provided a cost proposal to maintain and repair city vehicles. They have a very, very well-run maintenance operation at their Corporation Yard on Prado Road. This option was broken down even further into three subcategories that provide for different shuttling options. There was also an alternative that utilizes the City of Pismo Beach as a sole provider as well. And the last outsourcing one was to provide a regional approach for all of the other agencies in our area to combine resources. The six alternatives, I just want to briefly go through them, identify them. The first one was to maintain the auto shop staffing arrangement that we presently had previously of 1.5 full-time employees combined with outsourcing and maintenance and repair services. The second one was to reduce the auto shop staffing down to one full-time employee in combination with outsourcing. I mentioned earlier with the City of Pismo Beach, we have not received any proposal from them. This was just an alternative that was discussed in the report. One of the things that we could do too is to use them as a vendor as well. And then the last option, option six, was to develop a regional approach to fleet maintenance, in combination with some of the other agencies like Oceano and Grover and Pismo. I did want to point out that on this table that is shown on the screen here, item two, the level of service should be the standard. The main concerns, however, in developing the alternatives were the level of service. And the consultant developed three levels of service, including standard, high, and low. And the criteria set forth in the report on page two. And basically, the difference between those was the amount of effort that was provided by in-house staff in doing minor diagnostics and repairs in-house. The concerns with the level of service also related to the shuttling of vehicles back and forth between these various service providers. So that was another concern that that was raised. So based on the results of the study, it is recommended that the city implement alternative two, which is to reduce the staffing from 1.5 full-time employees to one employee and utilize vendors in the city. And then that's for the short term. And then utilize and try to develop alternative six for the long term. So that concludes my report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you, Councilmember Guthrie. This I believe was this item was brought forth at your request. So why don't you kick it off?
Okay. Well, I don't have any questions. I've actually asked quite a few questions of staff already, but if you're could step right into comments, I could go there as well. But
well, I am going to open it up briefly for the public, yeah. But I thought if you had any clarifications or questions.
No, actually, the two questions I had, which actually I talked to staff about before, had to do with the difference with alternative two and what was listed in the staff report is whether it was standard or high, and specifically how they developed the how the consultant developed his level of service estimates. But I don't have any questions of staff.
All right. Are there any other questions or clarifications in the staff report? Okay. If there are none, then 10A is not a public hearing. But once again, we typically allow public input on most matters on the agenda. This is one of them. If there are any members of the item or public that would like to come forward on item 10A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay. We'll close public comment on 10A, and now we'll come back to you, Councilmember Guthrie, and you can kick it off.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The reason I wanted us to take a look at this was twofold. One, obviously, when I looked at this report when we first got it and I saw an opportunity for significant cost savings, I felt we really should be taking a very serious look at the potential to save what, you know, is $100,000+. We are in the staff's recommendations, in fact, realizing some of those savings. But I also had some alternative reasons that I thought this was worth looking at. The first of these had to do with what we the level of service that we actually get for our fleet. I think, granted, there's a service that goes to the different departments in town, but when we actually look at what we would accomplish for our asset here within the city by going with the San Luis Obispo city program, we would have, one, gotten access to this information system that we're talking about purchasing, or talking about purchasing in combination with some other cities. We would have gotten, frankly, access to that for free. We've gotten access to it immediately. We would have, and flowing from that would be the ability, which I saw is, since we're talking about putting together ultimately a fund specifically for vehicle replacement, that we would have some hard criteria for deciding how this pile of money that we were accumulating would in fact be spent. One of the comments here that I was struck by the consultant was that there really wasn't very much hard data on how much mileage we have, what current maintenance programs are in place, that we really didn't have the data. In fact, we paid him quite a bit of money here to really tell us that he didn't have enough information to tell us to give us a really strong determination of where we were at right now. So that was one of the things I saw, was just immediately I saw the opportunity for us to get access to a much more sophisticated system for accomplishing and protecting this asset. The second thing that I saw here is we've talked about a South County program very similar to the San Luis Obispo City's one. Here we get instant access to an operation that's already up and going, that has most of the things we're looking for. It's just 10 miles farther away. Really, in reading, one of the alternatives is, in fact, that the whole South County would use the city of San Luis Obispo, that we could establish a program that would save us all of this money, in fact, maybe save us some more, as well as provide much better fleet maintenance for our fleet. So that's what I looked at when I saw this. I do understand that there are specific problems with the shuttling. I've had some discussion with the chief, but I guess I'm in the business where we deal with this all the time, where, frankly, the owners of my hotel say, well, we're going to make this change, and we expect you to deal with the issues. And, in fact, we do. You know, we find a way to solve these problems. And I think that's kind of the direction we have to think about. Granted, you know, business and government are different, but some of the innovations that need to take place sometimes need a push to make them happen. And the kinds of problems that I think that I see being projected here are not insurmountable, and that, in fact, if we just stepped into it and did this, then, in fact, I'm sure we'd find a way to get this done. I guess I'm twofold in bringing this forward. One is specifically that I think this is a great idea. I think we really should be doing this, but also in the future we need to be looking at, when we're looking at these kinds of cost savings potentials, I think we have to really look at the service level question on a much broader scale, not just in the very narrow scale of how does it change what we're doing today, and how could it potentially evolve to be a significant improvement. So those were my interests in having us review this. I think I'm probably the only one who had a specific interest in it. I do appreciate that we're going to realize some of the savings, but I really think we should be looking at moving forward with a more complete approach to this, and rather than setting it out in the future and moving forward. So those are my comments and my reason for asking for the more specific and in-depth review of this. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, I guess my problem is with this is that I can understand where Councilmember Guthrie's coming from. And I too believe that in the future we might be looking at some cost savings by consolidation with our fleet maintenance. I just don't think that we're there yet, and I don't think that the jump that we're going to be having to get there is going to be we're going to realize those particular cost savings at this particular time, which is why that I support where staff is moving forward. I do agree, when I looked at the same thing under level of service, that we probably do need to broaden that definition. The level of service is, as I see it in this report, deals primarily with the level of service to the departments. It doesn't necessarily identify the level of service to the fleets themselves and how the actual rolling stock are being cared for. So that's something that may need to be looked at. Because I think that that there has been some issues with keeping it in-house and in regards to getting things done in a timely fashion and so forth. But nonetheless, I don't see the need to move forward in any different direction than what we're moving than what we're doing now. I think that moving from 1.5 to one full-time employees is going to be a cost saving in and of itself this next fiscal year, and I'd like to just go with what staff has recommended previously. So those are my comments. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have one question. Is there been any discussion to do a pilot program with maybe like Parks and Rec vehicles? I know there's been some concern with the police department about if we were to use San Luis Obispo that we might actually need an additional vehicle. But is there any way we could have tested the water and see really if we do see a drop in service with less critical vehicles?
I mean, that's certainly possible that we could start off with an individual department and, try a system out, whether it be San Luis or whatever. But I certainly think we can try to do that.
What we could probably do is identify them as another outside vendor and utilize, the service on for specific vehicles. Our main concern, I think the main issue was with the full proposal is we determine when you figure in shuttling and washing vehicles and a number of services we currently provide in-house, we didn't really think 4B and 4C were feasible, that we would need to still maintain a full-time employee. If you maintain the full-time employee with the San Luis option, then you don't have any savings, and in fact it's more expensive than the option that we've recommended. But I think that's a good idea, that we could pursue them as a vendor and start utilizing the service and probably.
Just some clarification, Don. Mm-hmm. Public Works maintains vehicles for who? I know you don't do fire.
That's right, and we do all the other vehicles.
You do, including the police?
Including police, yes.
Okay. At this point, I think I would support Councilmember Arnold's observation. I'm always willing to take a fresh look, and if we can do it on a trial basis or on a progressive basis, look at some strategies that might involve some form of regional service program. To what extent have we pursued conversations or discussions with your counterparts and some of the other political subdivisions at all? How far have we taken this?
Well, I think our consultant has discussed this with each of the agencies in depth and to such a point that we received a proposal from San Luis. We discussed it with staff from Pismo Beach. We discussed it with Oceano, and we discussed it with Grover. So I think that discussions were very in depth.
Did you participate in those?
No, I did not. No, those were strictly by our consultant, Mike Corbett.
We have had some staff discussions also of the concept. One of the issues hanging up things right now is really the only facility that's probably sufficient to serve all the jurisdictions is the Pismo Beaches facility, and they're in the midst of upgrading their treatment plant, which is all part of the same facility there with the maintenance facility. So they can't really consider anything seriously until they get that all resolved, and then they can maybe look at some other things.
And as I understand this report here, they have not responded with any kind of a
not a firm
recommendation or
not a firm proposal at this time, as I mentioned, because they feel as though they're just up in the air right now with other things going on at their facility. So they.
Well, I would certainly be in favor of leaving the door open to some new ideas, as has been recommended in this report. But I'm okay with the strategy we have in place right now with that caveat. I agree with a lot of the observations that Councilmember Guthrie made about, potential. There's always potential. And so I think if we, kind of retain an innovative posture and look at some potential out there for cost savings and additional service level performance, that would be something that I would continue to support. Okay. Any other comments on this? Okay. I don't think you need a motion here then, right?
Nope.
That takes us to item 11A. Consideration of approval of a water wheeling agreement with the Oceano Community Services District for the Christie Family Subdivision.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, the city received a request from Robert and Cindy Christie regarding a possible water wheeling arrangement, similar, in fact, to the one that we have with Canyon Crest, to provide water to their property on Stagecoach Road in the county. Currently, the property, which is moderately sloped and steep terrain surrounding it, is zoned for 2.5-acre parcels, and it is served by a water well in conjunction with other adjacent properties. In considering the request, we reviewed the city's policy regarding water service to properties outside the city limit. That was something that the council previously approved. In accordance with the policy, the request from the Christies conforms to the four criteria set forth in the section related to developments outside the city's sphere of influence. Of course, one of the main issues of this whole request is fire service to the property. And service to the property by city infrastructure, pipelines and such, appears to address most of the fire department concerns. The Christie's request for service has been approved by the Oceano Community Services District and will go to LAFCO on July 21st with a recommendation for approval. There are some concerns from city staff that there will be continual requests to use city infrastructure to serve areas outside the city. Since there are other adjacent property owners just in that vicinity, there are others in the city and around the city which may seek similar service. Tonight, staff is also requesting that the council consider amending the water service policy to include two additional criteria so that we could use those in evaluating requests from property owners in the future that are outside the city limits or the sphere.
What's the county zoning on this property?
It's 2.5 acres. Lot size is 2.5 acres.
So would that be a suburban residential?
I think it's R1, rural residential.
Rural residential.
Rural residential.
It's rural residential. Residential, suburban, or rural, which there's two separate, isn't there?
I'm just quoting from the staff report. On the top of page 2, it indicates it consists of four 2.5-acre residential suburban parcels.
Thank you. If I could read my staff. Thank you. And in regards to, you talk about moderately sloped, have you seen a grading map, or we've been presented with a grading map on this particular parcel?
No, we have.
Sorry, not a grading map, but a, I guess.
Grading plan?
Yeah.
No, we haven't. We haven't seen any grading plans on this particular property. I'm not sure there are any, but we wouldn't normally require those or be presented with them since it's not in the city limits.
Correct, but we're talking about the terrain ranges from a 16% to 30% slope.
Right.
And I'm assuming that's information that's been given to the city by the applicant.
Yes, and that is also information that was in the environmental impact report. In fact, the statement of that moderately sloping with steep sides is what I got from the environmental impact report.
I went up on the property looked at the property today, and it looks like it's probably one of the steepest properties in that particular area. And I wouldn't know the difference between a 15% or a 30% or a 50%, but it just looked fairly steep. So I was just curious as to whether we actually verified that information. And the reason why I asked that is because there's reference made in our own general plan about county fringe area development, and it deals with areas that are being sloped and being treated differently. That's all. That's what my questions were. Don, could you respond to the letter that we received from, I'll get there, the county's hydraulic operations administrator in regards to their concerns? Sir, Department of Public Works.
Yes, I did receive a copy of the letter from the county regarding their comments on the mitigated negative declaration for this particular property. They have several concerns, although they're not concerned overall because of the small amount of water that's being requested. But they are correct in their assumption that this particular property is outside of Zone 3, which in the context of Canyon Crest, Canyon Crest was in Zone 3. They are concerned about using Lopez water for this particular area. However, there is also state water that comes down that particular pipeline that they could use as a supplement. They do indicate that there's sometimes interruptions in the state float for maintenance purposes and the like. However, I think the Christies have addressed that with the continued operation of the well that they are currently using. And as you can put this in context, the well is sufficient for domestic use. It was the fire flow that was the question. And they are going to be required to have a storage facility on site for the fire protection part of it. So I do think that the county had some valid points, but I think that they've been addressed, and I think the Christies have addressed those through some of the existing facilities they have, like including the well.
Thank you, Don. Also, Don, in the letter that we received as part of the report from Robert Christie, provides us with a map, and it actually has two properties that are highlighted, the Christie property and the, I'm assuming it's pronounced the Bat property, possibly. Mm-hmm. And these are the parcels to be served. We're not actually, obviously, this evening looking at that other parcel, but is that going to be something that's going to come before us as well in the future?
Possibly. It may be a request. I have had one meeting with Mr. Satine Bott, and he indicated that he might potentially want to do the same or make the same arrangements. And I think that's why we're recommending some of the changes to the policy that would address answering his requests.
So, Don, if we were to, as staff is recommending, look at the language changes, the two sentences that would then amend the current water service outside this.
So we kind of have two things we're considering tonight. One, this request, and then at the same time, we thought it would be appropriate to discuss long-range policy issues and potentially change the policy for future requests.
Okay, now I understand. Thank you.
Do you have any questions?
They were answered. Thank you.
Okay. Don, I do have a couple of questions, and I'm not sure whether you can answer this or perhaps representative from the Christie family can address this, but on page 2 of the staff report, top of the page, it says the parcel map was approved by the county in 2001, anticipating the use of an existing off-site water well that also serves three other property owners, so on and so forth. Then it goes on to talk about the fire flow issue down at the bottom of that paragraph. When the parcel map was approved by the county in 2001, do we know if there was any discussion at the time about the potential shortfall with regard to the fire flow? I mean, it seems like when we look at the it seems like there was an assumption with regard to the size of the storage tank involved here. Mm-hmm. And obviously the larger storage tank would meet the fire flow requirements. But once again, now we find ourselves in a position where you have a property owner that doesn't want to permit that.
Right.
What, was that even discussed or raised, or was it just assumed that it would by the county when they approved the parcel map that there wasn't going to be an issue in terms of fire flow?
And maybe the Christies could elaborate, but it's my understanding that the parcel map was approved and the property owners later changed their mind on locating that specific or particular storage facility on their property. So circumstances changed after the parcel map was approved. That's my understanding.
They changed their mind?
Yeah, the location of the tank, there's an existing storage tank, but the location of the new storage tank was going to be on someone else's property. And apparently during the design, the architect looked at that property and said, we can't have this particular storage facility on our property. And so that's when things changed.
Okay. And looking at the agreement, are we to assume that this water is sourced in a manner similar to we're wheeling this from Oceano,
mm-hmm.
theoretically?
Right.
So is this sourced as similar in a similar fashion as Canyon Crest? Is it assumed that the source is state water and it's Oceano's excess?
Yes. It's not excess. It's their entitlement.
Their entitlement.
Yes. That's correct. It's going to be their entitlement.
The unused portion of their entitlement.
That's correct.
Okay. Not excess, but the unused portion.
The unused portion.
Okay. Be careful how we frame this. All right. Okay, those are my only questions. Any other comments, questions, or clarifications? Okay. Once again, this is not a public hearing. But if there are members of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on 11A, this would be an opportunity.
Thank you very much. Terry Orton with Westland Engineering. Just a couple clarifications on things, I think. I think actually your number two will be consistent with what's taking place because we're only getting 1 meter to serve the 4 lots. Is what it amounts to. So there's really only going to be 1 connection for this particular property on there. And I think that would be consistent actually with your number two because it has the existing structures on there. And again, reiterating what took place, there were 4 parcels that were taking water service together. They have a 10,000-gallon tank. And I guess because the owners at the corner property, they all the way along had agreed to having a tank. But I guess when they saw the size of a 190,000-gallon tank, that was when they changed their mind about agreeing to it.
190 or 90,000?
190. No, 90. I'm sorry. I fibbed there.
Okay.
It was 90, yes. So anyway, I think that's what actually took
190,000 would change my mind.
Right, yeah, well, I think 90 would too, as a matter of fact, versus the 10. So any other questions I'd try to, or the Chrissies are in the audience also. Thank you.
Any other members of the audience like to come forward?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. I'm Robert Christie, and when I bought that property 25 years ago, there was no road, there was no water, there were no houses. I will not get into the long story of my life, but I wanted to emphasize the point that we've spent probably 7 years now trying to sort all this out. And the main, we had a number of technical problems getting the lot split developed. But once all that was occurring, we had always planned on having the existing well, which served four parcels and has enough water to serve 20 houses, to be expanded to a state small water system so that we'd have enough shares to go ahead with it. The Thomases, who's required a very large tank, but it was only when the Thomases started developing their designs with their architect for their home that they're going to build there, which will also depend on that same well, that suddenly we were found that they no longer were in agreement with us. And that's when we came to find that Oceano had unused water in their allotment or whatever you said. And so this is basically our only option at this point. We don't have fire protection. We don't have sufficient water in that system. It's a small pipe. It was designed for four parcels. We always were concerned about that. And we expected to be able to expand the system, not just in terms of the number of shares, but in terms of the capacity for fire protection. That's now not possible because they will not go along with the size of the tank, which was shocking to us when we found out as well. So this is the position we're in right now, and where there was just no way for us to proceed along that path without causing a great deal of community conflict, I guess you'd say, and with a completely unpredictable outcome other than just more costs. So that's where we are, and I hope you can see your way to help us out.
Thank you.
Are you guys going to sever the pipeline that connects back up to the water tank? I mean, are you going to separate completely from the connection with the other properties?
No, we have that share, and it cost me a lot of money. I dug the pipeline myself 25 years ago, and we think we need that as backup because it is state water and because we could be shut off, and we'd had these discussions with Don a number of times that it seems important to have that backup, and we have no need to, and nobody else has any requirement that we rid ourselves of that.
So that share. Actually is another question. I had that actually asked staff. So this is a permanent water. Potentially, the Oceano could take this water back or not provide it.
I'm sorry?
When you say you need the other water for backup.
Well, because of the statement that the state system could sometimes be shut down for a day or two or whatever, and this is also why I have a 4,000 gallon tank by my house, and we expect to have the other ones just do the same thing for that same reason. But if it took longer for their maintenance or whatever, then we could get the water from the existing well.
So the backup system is because state water might be temporarily unavailable.
That's what I was told. Yes.
That's interesting. Okay. I'll ask for clarification on that from staff, but okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the audience like to comment on this item? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close public comment.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah, you know, I wanted to follow up on that last comment, Don, and this issue came up before. I think when we were talking about the LAFCO, is LAFCO's position here with regard to fire flow being dependent upon state water, is that an issue with them based on the fact that there could be interruptions under drought conditions where the local reaches from the aqueduct are redirected elsewhere by DWR?
It doesn't appear to be, because LAFCO is recommending approval of this application from the Oceano Community Service District. So I don't believe so. The interruptions are usually short-lived, in 1 or 2 or 3 days, because of maintenance and those sorts of things. That's why the Christies are being required to have their well operational. And of course, this fire storage is in a tank, even if there was an interruption, as long as the tank is full, they have protection from fire.
Well, as I recall, DWR does have the authority to redirect under drought conditions, not for maintenance, but they can control the flow to outlying reaches from the aqueduct. They can simply shut it off if they deem it appropriate. I think the priority does go to high population centers. Mm-hmm. They have that authority.
Yes, they do. I don't know if they've ever done it, but I think they do have that authority in case of severe conditions. That would be the case.
Can I ask a follow-up on that?
Okay.
Yeah, just real quick, just mechanically, how a temporary change would work. Oceano's doesn't have the state water available to them. Are you going to go out and turn off their meter? I mean, because we're actually delivering them. I guess my point is that I don't see how they're meeting CDF's requirement on a temporary basis. If you understand what I mean, they're going to store, 4,000 gallons of water.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what
CDF's saying that they need, some part of 90,000. It's a whole lot more than they're talking about having available.
I mean, I don't know exactly what the requirements of CDF is, but maybe our fire chief can help us out with that.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, good evening. The situation that exists out there is today there is not adequate water supply in storage. And there is not the ability to expand to that to meet what is required for this project. Therefore, CDF has required an expanded capability, and since they cannot physically put it there, they are now requiring that water to come from us. I think that they consider the chance of the water supply getting shut off, and as you so appropriately mentioned, it would involve Mr. Spagnolo's crew having to go out there and physically shut it off because our water supply is not being interrupted by state water. Rather, the allotment that is going to Oceano is being interrupted. I think that they consider that so rare that they are that is an acceptable risk for them to go ahead with this. So you assume that there will be that water that is being used. One of the advantages that they have by having the stored water on their property is that their use of that water will probably be somewhat minimal. They will not be using that water for irrigation, for example, potentially. Certainly they would not be using it for fire protection unless it was some extreme circumstance, and we may actually go out and use that stored water in addition to the water that is coming off of the fire hydrant that will be located out there that'll be hooked up as part of this system. But bottom line is, I don't think that they are considering that water will be interrupted, and that is acceptable to CDF if they are tied into that system with us.
The firefighting water actually, it sounds like, wouldn't be interrupted anyway.
Keep in mind, the firefighting water is coming out of that hydrant system, which is hooked into our domestic system, which is coming from Arroyo Grande storage tank. And that is the crux of this whole thing, is that gives them the volume that they need, as opposed to them having to create that 10,000-gallon storage facility.
Maybe I'm getting too technical, but we turn off the meter because the state water is interrupted. The fire hydrant's still available.
That is a good question, and I would have to clarify that with Mr. Spagnolo, and if I may. Don, is the fire hydrant before or after the meter? Would the flow from the fire hydrant be metered, or would it not be metered?
It usually isn't, but in this case, I think it wouldn't be. From the design that's been approved, it would not be. Then
you're correct about that. Then that part of it would not be shut off. So the domestic part of it would be shut off, and the actual fire hydrant consumption would continue uninterrupted.
So actually, we could actually meet this, couldn't we, by just putting in the fire hydrant and not providing the domestic water at all?
That's beyond my pay grade. That part of it would have to be Mr. Spagnuolo or your decision.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Donna, in a follow-up with that, we have a city water tank up there. Is that correct?
Yes, it's shown in that as the big dot on the map behind you.
What's the capacity of that particular tank?
It's 250,000 gallons.
Big. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions?
Was there, I guess, following this whole thing up, since fire protection was the only purpose for this, was there ever any discussion about us providing just the fire hydrant and not actually wheeling water through from Oceano, because since they have the water capability from their well to provide the domestic use? It seems to me that there's a step in here that's unnecessary. Am I missing something?
Well, according to what we have to review these things, the policy that we're looking at, and the request, as Terry mentioned, part of it was for fire and part of it was for some domestic use, then in looking at the policy, there was clear in my mind that that wouldn't be applicable, even if it was for fire flow, because there is an amount of water that gets used for fire flow. And that would have to be estimated at some point if we wanted to charge them back for it. But we did not consider just separating the fire flow from the domestic flow, no.
Because it's in the city's best interest to have fire protection right on our border anyway. So
that settled the Santa Maria groundwater litigation. We can't provide groundwater outside of our sphere of influence. This property is outside of our sphere of influence. If you turned off the meter they would essentially have to be running on either groundwater or Lopez water if the state water is turned off. The rub is both of those sources are not legally available. Under the stipulation, you can't serve outside your sphere of influence, and the Lopez agreements, according to the county, and I haven't reviewed this, but I trust they're correct. Under the Lopez agreement, you can't serve outside Zone 3. So neither of those sources would be legally available to this property. And I guess your question is not really my answer. I am not answering your question, and that is, can you do this? From a liability standpoint, I'm not particularly worried because our agreements protect the city. And the district has probably more at stake with regard to that issue. Remember, all we're doing is wheeling water. We're an intermediary just taking someone else's water and giving it to a third party. It's the other issue that I'm a little more concerned about, and that is what they're saying is if you're going to turn off the deliveries of state water, there'll be no water going there. Well, the reality is there will be water going there. I mean, it's not going to actually stop, I don't think, although I guess it could. And the water that will substitute that state water is either going to be groundwater or Lopez water. Both of those sources you can't use there. And that's why this LAFCO issue, to me, it's more complicated, but I guess Don has a better grasp of what LAFCO's thinking than I do. Because LAFCO has to address this very issue in 2 weeks, and apparently they've already sort of looked at it and said we're okay with it. But I know I've complicated things. If your question was from a liability perspective, can we turn the thing off and not worry about it? Yes, we can.
That was one of my questions, but I do have the same concern that, and I guess what the chief said is as far as CDF is willing to take the risk that a fire is not going to happen when DWR shut down water, but in reality, if they were to do that, technically we legally couldn't use the hydrant to put out the fire because we're not allowed to use that water outside. I mean,
right. But the reality is it's going to be used. That's really what we're talking about.
So are the water police going to come and arrest us then for using the wrong water?
Well, you know, we joke about it, but in theory, depending on how much water we're talking about, it is water that's going to be violating the terms of a settlement agreement that we just entered into. Although this is probably not going to amount to a huge allotment of water, it could happen. He's back.
Back to my pay grade, down to my pay grade. If, in fact, there were a fire out there, or if there were a fire anywhere in the county area that was adjoining any of our city, the practice would be we would start shuttling water. And where do you think we would be shuttling that water from? We would go to the nearest fire hydrant, and we do this under the mutual aid agreement all the time all over the state of California. So we would be coming to somewhere perhaps on Stagecoach Road in the city of Arroyo Grande where the water system already exists, and there'd be CDF tanks, trucks that would be filling up. There would be Arroyo Grande trucks that would be filling up. There'd be Fresno County trucks that would be filling up, whoever was there, so that, in fact, that water would get used. If there were a wildland fire, if there were a fire somewhere where there was not a hydrant existing. Thank you.
I think the issue, correct me if I'm wrong, the whole issue of exigent circumstances comes into play here where you have a life safety issue.
I will point out, Mr. Mayor, if I may, that the first people that will be out there will be the Arroyo Grande Fire Department.
Yeah.
And this, I certainly don't want to tax that that other consideration that, you know, how do we do this in the future, but understand in this particular case, since it's gone so far and the development has gone as far as it has, we will be the first people out there.
Okay. I have one more question for Tim then. With the way we're looking at this, since, because I also saw that this BOT property was also on our map tonight, Will we have any problem with approving the Christie water and then changing our rules and then denying? Because I don't see us with what we're talking about proposing tonight, and as far as our change go, that there would be any way to serve the BOT property. We will not have any problems in our denial of that.
Again, from a liability perspective, no, we will not. You can change. This is a policy decision that the council has discretion over.
Why don't you go ahead and finish your position?
Okay. All right. Obviously, I look at this initially, and I thought this was a pretty straightforward. Sure, we may at some point down the future be looking to wheel water if we do desal or something through Oceano's pipes, and so why wouldn't we want to do this? Then there are all these other issues that came up as far as what water can be sent through the pipes and where you can admit it.
Where's the piping going to come from? In other words, is it going to be connected to Stagecoach, or is it going to come directly out of the storage tank?
If you can see the picture behind me, it'll come right off of this dotted line here, which is our 30 or 33 inch feeder line. So that's where the tap will be made. That's where the tap was made for Canyon Crest.
And who is paying for those improvements?
The property owners will be paying for those.
Okay. I'll get to my comments then. I see there's two issues before us this evening. One is a fire protection issue, and one is the city's land use issues or land use policies. In regards to the fire protection, I totally understand. We have a mutual aid response agreement, and it's going to be our folks that are going to be up there first, and that's going to be the case for all of our properties that are outside the city limits within our particular fringe areas. And I think that it's important for those folks to have the adequate resources. And I think that we can solve that issue probably a lot easier than doing what we're talking about today. If the applicant is willing to pay for the infrastructure to bring in basically municipal water that's being wheeled from Oceano, which is the molecules don't count, they're still the same water, but I understand the concept. I think that in primarily we're doing that for the basis of fire protection and safety. That same infrastructure could be connected or somehow connected to a fire hydrant, either connected to the tank, which has adequate capacity to provide the pressure and so forth, and we would then solve that issue for our fire department up in that particular area, not only for these particular individuals, but for all the individuals who may or may not decide to develop per county regulations and their codes. So to me, that would solve the issue of fire protection. My problem with this particular proposal this evening really comes down to an issue that's not even before us, and that's our land use policies. Our land use policies don't allow us to do this. Our general plan, specifically in our what we call the fringe and urban area land use element, states specifically that county residential rural and residential suburban classification areas in the city of Arroyo Grande fringe and area of environmental concern should not be expanded and new areas should not be created, period. It's not in our policies. We're basically, what's being asked of us this evening is for municipal services being provided to the county. And I think that we're in a situation where we're opening up a can of worms. Yeah, we can change the policy in regards to the water wheeling agreements and so forth. But really what I was hoping to see in this particular staff report, and not really hoping, but I think needs to be there because we're really talking about a policy issue, is a resolution with a lot of whereases. And usually we have to have findings, and those findings are typically mean that in order to do this particular policy item, that we have to be consistent with all of our general plan policies, and we're not, in my opinion, in this particular case. I understand it's not our water. I understand that that it's an agreement with Oceano, but our land use policies are actually in conflict with the county in this particular area in regarding to expanding this particular fringe area. So I would like to solve the issue by providing or having the applicant provide for the appropriate hydrant in the case that there is a wildfire in this particular area, because our folks are going to be first responders. But I cannot support the policy this provided to us this evening. I would support the staff's recommendation to add the two criteria that have been suggested, because I think that helps clarify and is probably more consistent with our land use policy in regards to our fringe areas. So that concludes my comments. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie?
Actually, I have a quick question for Tim. Maybe it's Don as well. It was actually the original question I was asking about whether the pipeline was going to remain in place. Could the 2 acre feet of water that Oceano is providing here be reconveyed to what's essentially a private water company? What's potential here? But I guess it's going to have me ask the same question about the previous ones we've approved. Mm-hmm. What I'm looking at here is, in reality, we could end up supplying all 9 properties or 14 to 16 properties that are potentially out here. We could end up supplying the water. I'm not sure even Oceano could stop them the way you're proposing it. But I think Tim's going to tell me something different.
For once, I think I'm going to get back to the question that was asked. You indicated it could another entity be set up and be used for transfer, avoiding the city, a private mutual water company, something like that. Could Oceano deal with some other entity other than the city and get the same result? I mean, could the Christies get their water? Yes. I mean, they'd have to set up a private mutual water company, or the group out there could set up their
that's
own.
That's actually not my question.
Darn. It would have been the first time I've answered one.
My question is if they took the acre feet of water and redistributed it to the people who are already connected to their system, what's to stop them from supplying water to all of these, to the bought property as well as all the other ones?
The same water police that Ed was talking about. They get out there with their guns. There is nothing.
Well,
there's restrictions in the agreement itself.
Yeah.
That's an agreement that Oceano has with them.
And I guess I'm clarifying, what is that agreement? Is it 2 acre feet of water?
Yes, it's 1 to 2 acre feet of water that will be monitored. And if for some reason that number goes up to 8, then somebody's going to go out there and say, excuse me, why are you using so much, or why are you using beyond your agreement? So
I hope when it's 2.1, we're actually turning it off, that Oceano is, because we're now supplying them our water.
Yeah, we're going to read the meter, and we're going to provide the information, so we do have a handle on what those numbers are.
Okay. I guess under comments, I tend to agree with Councilman Dickens here that what we want to do is provide the fire protection, which I think would actually solve the problem here. I don't know quite where CDF is with this, but if, in fact, we set up fire hydrant with some sort of reimbursement program if you know, God forbid there is actually a fire, then in fact we could solve this problem because they do in fact have enough domestic water to supply their system. So I'd be inclined to say let's set up the fire hydrant. Let's protect our fire department, protect our border, and solve this problem that way. I think that's a great solution and really protects us from our land use standpoint. And in fact, we aren't changing the way that we are supplying water going forward. And I would support the clarification from the. From the policy going forward as far as that there has to be existing structures for us to supply water. I mean, here we have two structures. Like I say, we're really talking about that there would need to be four structures here that we aren't, in fact, encouraging growth on the fringe. Thank you.
Okay. I thought I had a handle on this. After listening to everybody's comments now, I'm somewhat confused, but I'll give it a shot anyway. I think, first of all, with regard to the two issues that were addressed earlier, you have normal daily consumption, and then you have the fire issue, the fire potential issue. And I'm trying to distill that with your comments, Tim, about the groundwater settlement and some of the requirements that we have to ensure that we comply with. You know, this whole issue came up when we discussed Canyon Crest. The theory behind water wheeling is that we're taking the unused allocation portion of what Oceano has and we're the unused allocation of state water, which Oceano has, and wheeling it to another jurisdiction or to another location in this particular situation. But the bottom line is, And I think you mentioned this, is when that water flows through the pipe, it's not labeled state water. It's a mix of state water, it's a mix of groundwater, it's a mix of Lopez. So all we can do is measure what goes in and measure what goes out and make sure that it pairs up so that we don't exceed what was allocated in the agreement versus what we're actually supplying, because if that is exceeded, then it's coming out of our sources, our two sources. So to the extent that we need to monitor that, that's what you're saying you have a good handle on. Is that correct? Okay. I think from a liability standpoint, we have to be extremely cautious about that. What goes in versus what goes out at the other end at the location of the Christie subdivision. On the issue of fire protection, I believe there, Terry, if I'm not Madrins, you don't have those? They do exist.
They do exist, and the meter can actually be, the hydrant can actually be metered.
Okay. In those situations where we meter a hydrant under an emergency situation, then it would seem to me that we could restore what we used, could we not, to our supply? So we could go back in the aftermath and restore the quantity to our supply. So, I don't look at that as a big issue. I think we can make this work if we are studious and vigilant about, again, what goes in for whatever purpose and what goes out. The larger issue that Councilmember Dickens alluded to, as have others, is the whole policy issue. And, I guess you can interpret our general plan when we say extending infrastructure. You know, if we are extending a hydrant out there, that's hard infrastructure. But what goes through it is up for, I guess, interpretation as far as the actual resources owned by the city. So, you could make a case either way.
The bigger issue for me, and one of the reasons why, you know, I will support this, but I will also support the additional criteria that draws the line with all the, you know, legal fortification that we can put in place or interpret. But what really continues to amaze me is that, once again, we're being put in a position of having to bat cleanup. We're having to bat cleanup behind county planning and county public works. We had to do it for Canyon Crest. They already had structures in place. The water analysis study for that was woefully inadequate. We had people up there that could no longer access the water without expensive treatment at the wellhead. And yet we had a county department that approved that subdivision without adequate water. And then another county department came back and said, you can't even treat it because the effluent from the treatment is not something you can store on site. So we got into the water wheeling business behind a plea from property owners up there who were in a desperate situation because that development was approved by the county. We're now in a situation here, and it's one of the reasons why I asked that question earlier, where you had a parcel map approved in 2001 with the expectation or the anticipation that there would be adequate storage on adjacent property out there that would accommodate fire flow. And then you have a property owner that changes their mind. To me, that's a loose end that was not tied up that should have been. So we're now put in a position of having to back cleanup once again. I don't want to do this again. I personally do not want to come in and clean up behind what in my mind is an inadequate analysis of infrastructure planning and resource planning as relates to subdivision development. And I, for one, will not support doing this again. So whatever criteria we put in place that draws the line in the sand, that's what I will support. You know, I don't mind doing this because of all of the, you know, contingencies that we've put in place. But this is it, as far as I'm concerned. So those are my thoughts. And if there are no other observations, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would attempt to make a motion my motion would be that the City Council deny the water wheeling agreement with the applicant, the Christies, and but direct staff to work with the Christies and the other property owners within this particular area to formulate appropriate fire protection.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion on the motion?
Mr. Mayor, I would only amend that because I think the staff has asked us to look at the water wheeling policy. I would amend that motion to include the the two sections or two bulleted languages
that they would take that are in the water wheeling agreement. That's Exhibit A. That's something that you're not going to support. Is that what your motion indicates?
That's correct, to deny the water wheeling agreement as proposed.
Okay. Any other discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
No.
And Mayor Ferrara?
No. Okay, we have we do not have a majority. The motion does not pass. Anyone want to try another?
I'll give it a try. I'd like to make a motion to propose that we accept the water wheeling agreement as proposed and also adopt the staff recommendation to restrict future water wheeling agreements to limit properties have to have services or to have to provide services have to have existing structures, and the request for service is not for the purpose of enabling new development.
Okay. Is there a second? I'll second it. Any discussion? Roll call.
I do have one interjection, and I apologize. There are some mistakes in the agreement itself, so if we could just modify the motion to indicate that the agreement would be subject to modifications, review, and approval by the city attorney. It's replete with references to the Lopez agreement, which runs afoul of the law, so just with that minor tweak.
I'd modify it.
Okay, and my second will hold with that modification. Roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
No.
And Councilmember Guthrie?
No.
Okay. We may have to wait for a tiebreaker.
Mr. Mayor, could I ask a question to staff?
Sure.
Don, it's my understanding that this particular proposal as approved by the county, the lot split, basically, there's two particular residences on it currently on the Christie property. Mm-hmm. They're looking at a lot split and putting two more residents. That particular track map, in a sense, has been approved by the county. The only glitch is the fire protection issue. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. I mean, maybe the Christies could... it is water. It's fire flow and water.
And what's... I didn't understand that. So the domestic water is not adequate?
The report says it is. The report says it's possible.
Terry Orton with Westland Engineering again. There is adequate volume from the well, but with all the rules and regulations that are in place between the health department and everything else, this is interrelated. The fire and the domestic are interrelated.
How so?
The way it works is... You can go a shared well with four parcels or less. After that, you have to go with a state small system, which can go up to between 16 and 20. And then after that, you have to go to a mutual. Currently in place, there is a shared well system that provides water to the tank that's up at the corner. That was intended to be enlarged to a state small system. At this point, there's not a state small system in place, and the way that it's looked at by the county is, and well, actually it's by health and by the fire department, is they establish the quantities of water based on both domestic and fire requirements. So the tank sizing and all that is based on both of those items. And I tried to really pare that down because it's really a long subject, but
the reason I asked the question is it wasn't part of our staff report this evening. It was primarily an issue of fire protection. So that was news. So thank you.
Yeah. The thing on why the fire is as important as it is because that's really the key to this whole idea of water wheeling up there, is that the biggest health issue is the fire. And that's why, to LAFCO, this was a really big issue to them. So, sorry.
Okay. Well, my recommendation would be that if there's an impasse here, that we make a motion to continue this item.
That's the best we can do.
So moved.
And I will second that. Roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
No.
And Councilmember Guthrie?
No.
I'll try a motion. Let me try one real quick. I'd motion that we continue to August 9th with the provision that the staff investigate the potential for providing fire service fire service only and not domestic water, because it seems like we're sort of circumventing the intent of the LAFCO decision.
Can I ask a question?
If
we approve that motion, you'll do research, but we'll get this item back as it is. Also, is that
yes? With additional research regarding fire flow only.
But we could at that point then approve this. It wouldn't be restricted just to fire flow. Is that
that's correct?
Okay. Based on the discussion this evening, we'd probably do that anyways because we want to provide all the information we can for you to.
All right, then I can second that
decision.
Okay, let me make sure I understand what you've done then. Councilmember Guthrie is essentially give staff some homework with regard to the fire flow issue, but the issue, a staff report along with that additional information comes back to us on August 9th.
Oh, yeah, the whole thing comes back.
Okay.
I just want the alternative.
Right. All right. We have a motion. Did I understand a second here?
Yes.
All right. Any further discussion? Let's try another roll call.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Diggins?
No.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Now we took some action. Okay. Well, you guys are making me earn my money tonight. All right, that takes us to item 12, City Council Member items. Any items?
No, I think it's better on communications.
Okay. City Manager items?
None, sir.
Council Communication?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, just real quick, where are we at with the tree ordinance? I know that I thought it was going to Parks and Rec. And now I see the Parks and Rec was canceled, so I was curious.
Yeah, we recommended delaying it a month just because it was drafted, but there's still a number of issues. I think it needs a little more work. So we plan on just it's delayed 1 month. It'll come back to the...
So there is a draft out there available?
Well, it's still a staff draft right now. We're trying to add some things, but it'll come back in 1 month. It's a one-month delay.
So 1 month it'll come to Parks and Rec?
Yes.
And from there go forward. Okay, thank you.
Any other... Council communication?
I have two.
Okay.
The first one actually is just to commend staff for the redraft of the conservation easement letter. I thought that was outstanding. I think what you've presented here is just a much better product that will be well received. So thank you for doing that. I don't know if the other council members have any comments on that, but I think that's going to work really well.
We appreciate the suggestions. It helped.
The second item is the memorandum that we received on the subject of the East Village Plaza Creek Bank setback. It's a long one. And there was a note in here, Steve, that talked about that in your review that you did see that there were probably some issues that need to be addressed. And I was just going to, you basically say here, please let me know if you have any questions or would like to see these issues placed on the city council agenda. I, for one, would like to see this come back because I think there are some loopholes that need to be tightened up in regards to the creek setback and some policy issues that need to be ironed out. So that's just my comment, and maybe the other council members can respond to that.
I would concur with that as well.
Yeah. So would I.
Okay, any other council communication? Staff communication?
None.
All right. This is item 16 then, our last community comments and suggestions. Any member of the audience would like to come forward and comment on any item?
Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. I'd like to make an additional comment regarding the public hearing regarding the Historic Resource Committee. One of the things I personally have been involved in the construction industry in historic recovery of expertise available to that committee. As a resource, when you're out on a job, there would be someone available with the knowledge to say, yeah, you got to save that. That has to be saved, as opposed to just saying, oh, yeah, we want the general structure to have the same appearance. That would be basically all my comments regarding the Historical Resource Committee. I think it's a great idea. I've seen it work well. People with a great deal of knowledge as to what is historic and what is not, what can be reused and what cannot, can be a tremendous resource for people doing the project. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I don't see anyone else. Well, Vern's out there. Any comments, Vern? Okay. All right. With that, we'll close our final community comments and suggestion period. That'll take us to item 17, motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Oh. That went about 45 minutes longer than I thought it would.